Hello, hello, hello. I am Cortina Jackson, and you are listening to What's on Cortina Jackson's Mind. What a terrific evening I have planned for you, because I have the distinct privilege to speak with a phenomenal man who has got some great insight concerning security. And when we move about domestically and internationally, he is a former CIA agent security and has written an exciting book called Guardian. Ladies and gentlemen, I have with me Mr. Thomas Pecora. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Cortina. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for joining me. What a complete honor it is to have you. So I'm so appreciative. And we want to glean as much information that we can from you, so we won't delay. Now, you've worked on some very important operatives, and you've gained some valuable information and details that may assist us now in our own need for security awareness. But first, we want to learn more about you and kind of a little bit about your career background.
Okay. Well, I'm born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And going back to late 1988, I saw an ad in the newspaper for a job with the CIA. So I applied, went through a vetting process, interviewing, polygraph, and a variety of tests, writing tests, intelligence tests. And I was lucky to be hired. So in 1989, I started my 24-year career with the CIA in the Office of Security as a multidiscipline security officer.
Wow. You know, I tried the CIA. They said that was so hard, such a hard process. And I guess the vetting process is probably the biggest piece of that.
Extensive and long.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I can imagine. So it kind of, being with the CIA for so long, it kind of gave you the material you actually needed for this book that you have written, The Guardian, or Guardian.
Guardian, Life in the Crosshairs of the CIA's War on Terror.
Oh my goodness. So even before we get to the book, you were a part of an operative. Tell us about what you did with the CIA exactly.
I had a variety of roles. My career track was security, but I bounced around into a lot of different career security related jobs. I started out doing background investigations, and then I moved back to DC where I was working in the security duty office. And that's when terrorism kind of reached out and shook me, because I was on duty one morning, on cold morning in January 1993, when a Pakistani terrorist attacked the front gate of the CIA headquarters. And he killed two of our employees and wounded three. And this was even prior to the first attack on the World Trade Center tower. Wow. So for me, this was a major moment in terms of terrorism, and that's kind of why I wrote the book the way I did. It's my career, kind of dealing with terrorism, the 24-year span, the war, basically the war on terror, and it gave me a lot of good insights on security, because I traveled all over the world. Protecting our personnel, our property, and our information.
Gosh, wow. You know, I'm sure you've seen just a lot of things that I'm sure was pretty scary, and things that we may not even be aware of, or, you know, we just don't think about those all the time. But yeah. Did, you know, experiencing that, did it really shape, I guess, kind of shape you overall on even, you know, being back home, even when you're off duty, and did seeing some of these things, and do you think it affected you any?
Absolutely. You can't be in this line of work, especially with the things that have happened over the last two decades, without it affecting you. And since my role was to protect our people, I had to learn a lot of different skills. I was trained with firearms. I was trained on personal protection, that bodyguarding. I was trained on physical security, locks and alarms. I was trained on anti-terrorism force protection measures, to include like gates and the way we build our infrastructure to protect our bases or our buildings. So I learned a lot of different things, and I got exposed to a lot of areas that were under difficult times, what we call low intensity conflicts, war zones, high crime threat areas, and then areas that had a very difficult environmental situation. You know, well, basically you're talking about natural disasters, areas where there's earthquakes, typhoons, and things. So I had to learn about all the different threats, and that's helped me actually learn to protect our people better. All that experience allowed me to work more efficiently.
Wow. So interesting, because like I said before, these are things that we don't think about, or we're just totally not even aware of. There are threats and things that a lot of people are aware and you know, kind of take notice of. But when you have seen, you know, just some of the things that even through terrorism that are just unfathomable, it's just, you know.
Yeah, every major war zone from basically 1993 on, I up until 2013 when I retired. So I saw a lot of what the U.S. was doing overseas, humanitarian efforts, for example, in Somalia, in Bosnia, war zone situations like in Iraq and Afghanistan, natural disaster situations in Philippines, other places in Asia, and then terrorist threats in the Middle East. And then you've got the regular things that are actually a bigger threat to the average person overseas, which is transportation situations and crime.
That is exactly kind of what I want to get to is a lot of people want to travel and they want to go to places that they're unfamiliar with. You know, of course you want to see different things and experience different things, but experiencing what you have experienced, what would you say is something that people aren't aware of when they travel internationally that they probably should be, you know, you can't stress enough of to be weary of, or well, I say weary, but you know, to
be. You should be cautious when you go outside your comfort zone. But a lot of people, they get distracted by, you know, terrorism and crime. And the truth is the biggest threat to a traveler is transportation overseas. Just moving about from place to place, especially in vehicles. I'll give you one example. People go to Thailand, which is a great place. They get enamored with the culture, the weather, and then they rent a moped or a little scooter. And a lot of them find out the hard way that that's a really dangerous place to drive one of those. In fact, that's the deadliest place on the planet for motorcycle, motorbike, moped travel. Year on year, there are more fatalities in Thailand than any other country in the world.
Really?
So these are things that you don't think about. You think, you know, I'm okay. I'm on a moped. No. So doing research on where you're going and looking at the real concerns, digging into the data that's there. That's one of the things I recommend anybody who goes overseas, you know, do your research first. And I can provide some specifics on an actual plan on how to do this smartly, whether you're traveling outside your own city or to another country.
Yes, we definitely want to hear that because, you know, these are things that we must be, you know, security aware, just a security awareness. And some of those things we do. We went to Jamaica and on a cruise, and there was a gate. You could shop, of course, where they, you know, where you stop at the port. And then there was a gate when you go out, you were going into the actual village there. And we were so excited. And as soon as we stepped past the gate, it seemed like we were just being closed in. Everybody ran to us to shop here, over here, over here. And at first we thought, you know, they're just excited because we're here to shop. And it seemed to get a little more dangerous as they were telling us, One guy came and said, get in the taxi, get in the, you're not safe here. Get in the taxi. I'll take you to Montego Bay. And they were just, and then this one would say, don't listen to him. Listen to me. You guys got to get out of here. And they began to close in on us until we were funneled in to almost like an alley. And we noticed we were getting further and further away from the ship. And it took a while. We almost were in a dead sprint to come back to where we started. And, you know, just kind of going places. And we were telling others who were about to cross that gate, hey, you may not want to. And people were going because they were excited.
That's what they call fringe areas. That's where the criminals like to operate, because there's people there, but yet they can get you off the path very easily to where you're not quite seen. And that's when the bad things happen.
Exactly. And you know, you don't hear about those all the time because, you know, especially with the news, sometimes things are not mentioned.
Yeah.
And you just don't realize how much danger lies in you know, traveling. And in no way am I, you know, trying to say don't travel and don't go to places, but to absolutely be aware of these things. What would you say is something that that you have seen that has happened, I guess, with terrorism in the different countries, as far as, and here's one thing that I have noticed or that I am aware of, that people go into war zones and they don't even realize as they're hiking or they're moving from one area to the other and realize they're in a very hostile situation. What is your take on that? Does this happen quite often?
Yes. Unfortunately, people, they just assume. And whenever you're traveling, and even if you're going to another city, just nearby to where you live, you should do your research. There's two main things you need to have. Knowledge of the area. So you've got to do some research and find out, okay, where are you going? What are the possible threats? And then you have to, when you get there, you have to raise your level of awareness. And you have to be very cognizant of what's going on around you. And also use that knowledge that you acquired before. Hopefully you'll know your routes. You'll know the safe havens, areas that you can go that are safe, police departments, fire departments, safe areas. And then there's always the medical situation. You never know when you may need a hospital. So what we recommend for our people when they travel is you plan ahead and you do your research.
Mm.
And for example, going overseas, one of the best resources is the State Department's country safety documents. If you go on state.gov, they have a variety of reports on what's going on in specific countries and sometimes down to the town level. And they'll tell you, okay, there's areas that you shouldn't go because of rioting, or there's maybe they're having strikes, so the transportation is affected, or you may find out that there's a there's some type of disease that's going on. So if you don't know that in advance, you're not going to be prepared, or you may decide that's not the country I want to go to right now.
Mm.
The other part is the personal safety part. You have to be aware of your surroundings, but more than that, you have to look at the situation with a sense of reality. Bad things do happen to good people. And if you are in denial, the information that you have is not really going to be that usable, because you're not going to listen to that little voice in your head that says, that doesn't look so good.
Mm.
And when we start ignoring that voice, we get into a lot of trouble.
Wow.
So the other thing, it basically comes down to the last part is equipment. Bringing the stuff that you need with you, having the basic equipment. And nowadays with a smartphone, you know, so much of that's right there at your fingertips. You have the access to the internet, so you can do research. You can find out what's nearby. You have GPS, so you have mapping. So there's a variety of things. I also recommend when you're traveling, at a minimum, of course, your IDs, any medical alert type documents, and then a flashlight. No matter, I know everybody's got a little flashlight on their cell phone, but that's not going to do you much good in a really completely darkened building. And So we call that everyday carry type items. So cell phones, flashlights, and your ID. And then doing your research will help you feel more comfortable about where you are, and you're most likely going to have a better time because you feel more confident.
Okay, tell us this, if you can. If you are taken hostage and you're in foreign territory, is the CIA, is anyone coming to get you?
Well, I can tell you that when I worked in Iraq from 2004 to 2005, there was a unit that was composed of the military, the FBI, CIA, and basically all the major elements, State Department. And they were working on all kidnapping cases or lost personnel. Now, if you are just lost in Colombia, it's going to take a while for them to mobilize. And we operate on the 90-10 principle at the CIA in terms of personal safety. We look at it as 90% of our efforts on avoidance and 10% is on dealing with that after the bad thing happens. Mm-hmm. So I would rather spend more of my effort and time on avoiding and less on, because once they got you, it's not a good sign. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bad situation. If you're going to go to a place that there's really a kidnapping risk, you better know that in advance. You better make a concerted effort to decide, do I really want to go here? Can I go to another country that's similar, has all the good things without the bad?
Yes.
The second part is, if that environment is that dangerous, you need to take precautions and make sure that your activities make it extremely difficult for them to get you. And you're a real targeted commodity in places like Colombia, places in the southern Philippines, places like that, where if you go, you are definitely at risk. My advice is don't go to those places.
Don't go. Exactly.
Sorry, but it's
true. Exactly. Yes.
Kidnapping is not something that you're going to easily recover from if you survive. So ounce of prevention and a million pounds of cure there.
Exactly. And that would definitely be the advice to take for those who are traveling, or for those, you know, if anyone is listening and this helps, if you are taken hostage, is there any advice that you would give? I know in hostage situations with the state, there are things that we learn about, not crying, not making yourself, where you stand out,
There's two types of hostage situations that you got. The temporary, which is more of a criminal act in the sense of it's not a hostage taking. It's a daytime hostage thing to get maybe they run you around to an ATM. There's also you have to make a decision during the event. Is this a hostage taking situation, or are they going to take me to a place, do bad things to me, and kill me? And I hate to go with that graphic, but we call that the secondary crime scene. And if it's not a hostage situation, a traditional Colombian thing, you have to decide before you get in that car whether you're going to survive your next location. And when it's a situation where it's somebody's probably going to take you to a secondary crime scene and do something bad, your survival rate is going to be really low. So in that case, and I would recommend that you don't go, that you do everything you can to stay out of that car and fight it out there. If you get hurt during that fight and they leave you, you have a better chance of getting medical care. Also, if the worst thing happens and you are killed, at least your family's going to find your body. It's going to be there. You're going to be taken in into the system. If you disappear, what it does to a family is horrific. So now you got me into the worst case scenario type thing.
Right,
but if you don't think about these in advance, you will not be able to think about it at the moment.
Exactly.
You have to make a decision before the event happens what you're going to do. So if you get in a situation where you think they're going to take you away and going to do you some pretty serious harm or as they legally say, serious bodily injury or death. You have to decide what you're going to do. And you should make that decision beforehand. That's part of what we talk about in terms of personal survival, mental preparation. Mm. If you're not mentally prepared for these events and have thought it through, as I said, you're not going to be able to do it on the fly. Too many things are going to happen. So you have to make your decision now. Am I willing to fight off an attacker? Am I willing to not go in that vehicle, that van with that very scary looking dude? Mm-hmm. Those are things we need to do. And then to bring it back to a more more normal situation, sometimes it means not going into the elevator. The elevator door opens, you see somebody that you don't like the look of, you don't worry about what they think, you don't go in the elevator. True. Or if you're in the elevator and somebody else gets in you don't like, you get off.
Yes.
One of the analogies they say is if animals use elevators, if the elevator door opens and there's a lion in there, the gazelle's not going in.
Exactly.
To the elevator. He's smarter than that. Okay.
Yes.
So, you know, we need to make decisions in advance. And if you say, oh, okay, I'm not going to worry about what people think, I'm going to do what makes me safe. Okay.
Right.
So
right.
If I see something I don't like, I just go on I've already got my plan.
Exactly. I do the same thing in restaurants. I don't sit with my back to the door. If I'm in a movie theater, I when I sit down, I check all exits. There are things I do. Even in grocery stores, when I go in, I look for the other exit to make sure I know where that is. And, you know, just little things we don't think about with the
security. Well, that's you've hit something that is part of the basics. And this is good advice for everything from a terrorist event to an active shooter to a basic criminal event to a natural disaster. You should know as much about your surroundings as possible. So when you walk into a restaurant or a shopping center or a mall or a small store, the first thing that should go through your mind without being paranoid, just look for your exits. Be aware of where your primary and secondary exit is. And then when you're in that location, be aware of who's around you and what route you're going to take if something happens to get out. And that little bit, if you make it a habit, we like to train the kids this way. Mm-hmm. It's a game. You walk into a place, who knows where the first exit is, the primary? Who knows where the secondary is? Maybe you go, the first thing you do is you go to the bathroom, and while you're walking to the bathroom, you find out where the tertiary exit is. These are things that will do you well on any of these emergencies. And it's so basic, and it becomes, if you do it enough, it becomes a habit. You don't even think about it.
Right.
And yet it's there when you need it.
Yes.
And this is the baseline of information that you must be aware of your surroundings, not only in terms of those exits, entrances, maybe where the smoke detectors are, where the fire extinguisher is. You should also kind of look around and be aware of, you know, where the local police. Is there a security guard?
Right.
Just things that you may need later. Where's the first aid kit? These are things, especially at your work.
Oh, yes.
And then if you stay in a hotel, you're in unfamiliar surroundings. You should know where the exits are. You should be able to count the doors from your hotel room to the exit door. Because in a fire, power may go out. You may be in the middle of the darkness. You've got to find your way out.
That's right.
By doing this in advance with no stress, that information is inputted in your main computer.
Yes, yes. Okay, tell me this. We talked a little bit about abroad and you know, some of the terrorism. Okay, if you're able to answer this, I know a lot of people wanted me to ask, are we in danger of sleeper cells? In America, are we at potential risk of terrorists who are already here, or you know, do you all have intel on those situations?
Well, we've had, as I mentioned, when I was in the CIA in 1993, there was a Pakistani terrorist who decided to attack. So going as far back as 93, there's always that risk. Now, if you look at the statistics closely, a terrorist attack or even an active shooter event is a strike of lightning. If you look at the population, your chances of being in that situation are so slim. So what I don't want you to be is too focused on something that's very, very unlikely when you've got things that are much more common and much more dangerous to you personally, individually, all of us. So that's where my focus would be. Yes, there is a distinct possibility that we're going to see more terrorism in the United States. But I will say, if you look at what's happened since 9/11, the incidents are rare. Now, I'm not talking about active shooter. I'm talking about strictly terrorist incidents. The U.S. government agencies have been working extremely hard to keep that threat offshore, and they're continuing to work that. Now, going back to what I talked about, being aware of your surroundings, as individuals in this country, we have a responsibility to, if we see something, to say something. And that means if we are aware of our surroundings, there's a good chance we're going to see something as it starts to develop. We're going to realize, that guy doesn't look right. Mm. Or something he's doing is off. And it's all about behavior, okay?
Yes.
And by the time you're 19 years old, we're very good at reading when things are off.
Right.
And at that point, this is another part of the deciding in advance what I'm going to do. If you decide that I'm going to seek out authority if I see something I don't like. Mm-hmm. And that that works to make us all safer. So as a personal thing we can do is be aware of surroundings and then notify somebody if you see something that's off. Worst case scenario, they go, thank you for providing that information. We'll check on it. And if it turns out to be nothing, well, no problem. But if it turned out to be something, it's possibly a real save.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Great. Thank you for answering that. I appreciate it. I wanted to make sure I addressed that and remember mm-hmm. to get that in there, because I have people who, you know, did want to know. I always wanted to know I'm kind of the weird one. I've been in law enforcement and
security
my whole life. So I'm very aware of a lot of things, and
you're well trained. You're indoctrinated.
I think I overreact, but I'm like, no.
No, actually, we there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and we need to react, or at least be conscious of it. Now, you mentioned something about our situation now. I can tell you in other ways, we are in a lot of ways safer than we've been. There are a lot more resources available. I mentioned before your everyday carry thing. You have a cell phone with GPS capability. And they also, now we have equipment that we can put on our cell phone or attached or use with our cell phone to make our life safer. I'm the security officer in residence for an organization that has a piece of equipment that is cutting edge in that way. Mm. And it's... the company is called WanderSafe, and they are an affiliate of Jesu Women's Safety, and they've developed a product called the Beacon. Basically, it syncs with your phone, and it is a bright light with a loud piercing alarm, which then, when you activate it, it sends a signal through your phone to at least three of your contacts saying that you are in a bad situation. So by setting up that link, as soon as you activate that, you've reached out to the world. So now you have your own personal alarm system to alert people that you're in trouble. And GPS is your location. These are things that we didn't have in the old days.
No.
So that's a bit of technology that is extremely useful now. So you get a combination of, we call that fight with light. Bad guys don't like light. They don't like sound.
Exactly.
And they don't want anybody to know you're letting them know that there's something going on. Yeah.
And that is available now. That is correct. That something that anyone can join or activate?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wander wow. Safe, the beacon. And in fact, it's becoming so popular that it is now on duty free on several international airlines.
Wow.
It won an award for the best of its class for the 2019.
Thank goodness for technology. I'm telling you, it has just been phenomenal.
And it's smaller than a backpack. So it's a little device thankfully. That you can hang on your backpack or keep in your pocket. Yes. Or keep
that's
it in your
pretty
purse.
Neat. Okay. Yeah. We'll ask about that later at the end so that if anybody's interested, definitely, because that is wonderful information. No longer we have to carry around the whistle. Now we have some other things that we can use.
The part of that app will also provides hotspot information about where you are. So you pull up your location and it says, oh, that people have reported that there are unsafe areas in this location on this block or in this neighborhood. So it provides another part of that environmental awareness, which is so critical to every and any emergency, whether it's fire.
Yes, exactly.
Flooding. Yeah.
Wow. Great for kids.
Absolutely.
Wow. That's extraordinary. Now, one of the jobs that you do now, you're also a personal safety expert for an active shooter training company. So what kind of things do you share with your trainees about active shooter situations? Is there anything in particular that you always stress with your trainees about those situations?
That's a real good question. It goes back to the basics that I've been covering. Mm. No matter where you are, you should know where the exits are. You should have you should know where the nearest safe havens are located. You should know a general idea of where you're going to go in an emergency. And all this stuff needs to be programmed, not during the emergency, prior to the emergency. And then when you go to work, or you're going to your school, or in your house, you should have that information. Should be like knowing where your car keys are. You should know this information. And then when you go to an area that you've never been before, like a mall or shopping area or maybe even a business, you're going to a courthouse. Again, these are things you should be looking for, because if a situation turns bad and an active shooter event unfolds, your first and best option is to utilize those exits, to know, to take that route and run it. And that's why you want to have knowledge of it, at least a primary and a secondary. So if you're being blocked by the shooter on the left, you go to the right. And the escape is the best option. That's why they call it run,
yes,
hide, fight, right?
So,
and the other part of that is, if you're aware of your surroundings, as soon as you hear something that doesn't sound right, you should be reacting. You should act. That couple of seconds to a minute is usually the difference between somebody caught in something and somebody who got out.
Yes.
So that basic level, I stress extensively, because that's something that we've used successfully in areas where the threat is really much more ominous than here.
Yes. And that's important for people to understand. Run, hide, then fight. Don't be a hero, or
this a fight avoided is a fight won.
Yes, so important. And if you can't escape the situation, then barricade and try to get out of Dodge, if possible. Wonderful. Boy, I wish this was available in a lot of workplaces. Not too many trainings for active shooter, and we're seeing this more and more in the workplace. So you would think that there'd be more training in this, but if it's not provided in the workplace, educating yourself about active shooter situations.
You're responsible for your own safety.
And that's so true.
The other part is to have a safety plan for your work, but not at your gym. And not, in the other places in your life, you've got to have a plan with you. You got to take that plan with you, and you got to use it.
Yes.
So that's, and then you've got to train your children, and they need to know. And this is kind of the basic level that you can use anywhere.
Yes.
Rather than a specific plan that is only good for that if you work in that hospital or that office building.
Right, right. One of my questions, and you've answered it, you know, do we put ourselves in compromising situations? And I was reminded of my ex-husband now, but we went to New Orleans, and he had his cell phone out, looking down at the cell phone, and you know, we're walking, you know, unfamiliar with where we are, mm-hmm. but his head was buried in the cell phone.
Yeah.
And as he's walking ahead of me, I'm looking at people on the sides who, you know, were watching him and watching different tourists to see if they were paying attention. And I finally got his attention, said, put your phone down, put your phone away, pay attention, look around. And 'cause I'm watching, you know, they were looking for someone who was vulnerable, and absolutely. You could just tell at any moment they were just waiting. And I think we, you know, I try to blame it on millennials and teenagers that bury their heads in the phones, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are pretty yes. guilty.
Oh yeah.
Of, you know, we're attached to our phones. We work. Well,
it was newspapers or magazines.
Yes.
And you brought up a good point. There's three areas where we get ourselves in compromising situations. It's basically if we are walking around in a sense of denial that nothing will happen to us.
Mm.
We get our ego involved. Oh, I should be able to do that. And then the third part is we ignore our instincts. Those three things are, that's a triple whammy. And that's going to get you in trouble. Because as you pointed out, the bad guy is watching.
Yes.
The bad girl, because they're both.
Yeah, yes.
And, science had looked at this, and they have found that there are a number of traits that the bad guys are looking for. And one of the first ones is a not awareness of your surroundings. They want to be able to surprise you. They want to be able to get you in a compromising position. And if you're aware of your surroundings, it's very difficult to do that. If we are aware of our surroundings, we keep our ego in check, and we listen to our instincts. If it just so often we hear people say after the fact, I kind of knew something was wrong. The hair stood up on the back of my head.
Right.
By that time, it may be too late. Listen to your instincts, and when in doubt, you know, take the safe route, and then, you know, we can laugh it off as maybe it was not such a bad alley. But why find out?
Right. Right. Okay, tell us, we talked about some of the personal safety devices that are being developed or are actually out there. Are there future weapons that may assist us in some of these, you know, some of these takedowns of active shooters or, you know, even just things we have going on with the different crimes? Are there already weapons available?
Well, we're working on technology, but when you get into an altercation situation, you're now in damage control. Anytime you're that close to the event, you're really in the danger zone. That's why, as I said, in our organization, we really do the 90-10. We really work on avoidance. And while law enforcement has got to engage and first responders have to respond, as citizens, our best bet is to utilize the skills to stay out of it. And when we start to see something or hear something, respond immediately. Don't second guess. Because anything that where you actually get involved, that mm-hmm. there's danger where
yes.
avoidance, there's a lot less.
Gosh, we can't stress that enough.
No.
Oh gosh. Okay, now tell us, you're about to do this major book signing soon. How exciting. Yes. For The Guardian. And I really want you to tell us about the book, because it's available and it's so interesting. Again, tell us a little bit about the book, or as much as you want.
Well, it's about my 24 years at the CIA. It's a historical memoir of my work in security, counterterrorism, and protective operations, bodyguarding. It's the prequel, basically, to the 13 Hours book and movie, because it tells the story of a unique protective operations element that was started back in 1991. Mm-hmm. And that was covert. It was unknown to the public up until really the Benghazi incident when the security element at the annex rescued the State Department people. And I was part of the first group to go through training and to be officially part of what they called at the time the Protective Operations Cadre. And so my first deployment with them was in 1993 when I went into Somalia. And this was pre Black Hawk Down. I left Somalia just before that happened. But I was involved in all the lead up to the Black Hawk Down incident.
Wow.
And then I worked in a variety of places in the Middle East. And the book talks about those events. And I was kind of like the Forrest Gump of security because I seemed to be there when events happened. I was working in Asia during when 9/11 happened, working against terrorists that the planning for the 9/11 was initially started in the Philippines by a guy named Ransmi Youssef.
Wow.
He's the guy who did develop that idea. So I was in the heartland of terrorism in that way in the Philippines. And I worked in the Middle East a lot. I also did work in a special counter surveillance unit where we would track and look for terrorist signature and look to protect our people and also to go after those units. So I worked in such hostile places as Khartoum, Sudan, and Northern Africa and the Middle East. And then later I moved up and I was an area security officer and I was posted in Asia providing security support to our operations during a lot of different events. And then moved on, of course, I was the head of security for all of our operations in Iraq. And so I got to experience a lot of different events in history. I worked with a lot of, you name it, the special operations units, you know, SEAL Team 6 Delta,
wow,
all of the elements, because coordinated efforts working against terrorism. So it's a great book in terms of understanding why the government, why we were doing what we were doing and where, and why did it, you know, what did it affect, why did it affect Americans? And why were we in the Philippines working? And why were we going against terrorists and in other areas in the Middle East, you know, and how we were preventing attacks in the U.S. So,
So the book, is it very revealing? Are there things that we will learn in the book that we are not aware of?
Absolutely. There's the way we operated in this unit was by stealth. So that was, we were very successful. I'll give you an example. Basically, up until 2013, from 1991 to 2013, we never lost a protectee, and we only lost one of our officers. And that's going through multiple war zones, an awful lot of activities in bad places. So that's an extremely successful, and we remained covert up until Benghazi, where the lid kind of got taken off. So it's never before stories about that. And then also some stories about counterterrorism that were, it's only been mentioned once before, but obliquely, when we were working against terrorist units in Sudan, the unit that I worked in, we actually were a part of the effort to get a major terrorist named Carlos the Jackal, famous for his terrorist activities in Europe. And Bin Laden was running around in Khartoum when I was there. And
so, oh my.
A lot of exciting activities. But it also, my book was focused on helping people understand what it's like to be working in that environment as an American citizen. You know, what are the good points and the bad points? What are the highlights and then some of the not fun parts? You know, the human story behind what it takes to do that. I was undercover for 23 out of 24 years.
Wow.
So for many years, I couldn't tell my family anything that I was doing. And the book is extremely revealing that way. They had no idea what I was doing. The human toll. And
yes.
Then helps explain, you know, there are people 365 days a year living and working in hostile conditions all over the world to protect our citizens. And they're not in the military. And they often don't get their recognition.
That's absolutely right. Yes. Oh, wow. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Now, you mentioned your family. After knowing It was after the fact. So mm-hmm. knowing this, I'm sure, you know, it was too late to say, oh, get out of this or don't yeah. do this. And, you know,
I try to keep their fear factor to a minimum. But when they knew I was posted in Iraq during 04, every time they heard of a bombing in the green zone, they were afraid. So it was, nobody does this stuff alone. And having family yeah. members that you know are worried about you and are there, you know, to support you, it's, right. it's wonderful. Nobody does it alone.
Oh, now did you get any pushback from the CIA or did you hear anything from
the White House? It took me 3 years to get through the Publication Review Board and to fight to get some of this data out. It was a major battle. It was one of the biggest battles I've ever had administratively wow. in my life. Yeah, it was very difficult, but I got it through. And they were even, you know, I was able to get a lot of just brand new information that and people didn't know anything about these units and some of the, a lot of things that we did. So even people in the government that have read the book have said, wow, we had no idea that it was going on.
Wow. Is there a movie in the making based on this?
There's some exciting times in the book. So I've been told that we're looking at that.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to some book signings. I'm going to New York for a book signing and a writer's convention. And so it's going to be an interesting ride. Coming out from undercover, it's been an experience talking about something that for 23 years I would have lied to you about.
Exactly. Yeah, be prepared. Everyone's going to have great questions for you. Well, tell us where we can find the book, your website, social media.
It's available on Guardian, Life in the Crosshairs of the CIA's War on Terror, by Thomas Pecora, John Land, and Lindsay Preston. And it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble in the bookstores in hardcover. And also it's available on Kindle.
Oh, and, good.
So there's also a Guardian video on YouTube, and that video has photos in color that are in the book, and then also some photos that weren't in the book. So those people who read the book, it's a treat to see some of the photos bigger in color and then some additional things.
Oh, great. Do you have a personal website as well?
I have a Facebook website for it called Guardian. And
okay.
And and I also have an Instagram.
Okay.
Guardian underscore novel.
Guardian so. Underscore novel.
And I'll be putting more on Instagram as I go through some of these book signings, et cetera.
Wow. This is so, so interesting. And I so appreciate you coming on here because there is just so much information that people will be able to glean from you and read this book and just, I'm excited. I cannot wait to get my hands on it because I'm just going to binge read. Everybody binge watches TV. I'm going to binge read you because this is just so interesting. And I just think you're fascinating.
Well, thank
and
you.
I appreciate your service and so many others do because you all just really have a hand in protecting us. And we really
the joint truly, effort. You get your law enforcement on the States and we're overseas. So
indeed.
Can't get done without all elements.
Well, thank you so much, sir. Anything you want to say to sum it up? The floor is yours.
I think people will find the book interesting. You don't have to have any background in security. There's a lot of security elements in there but it's also just an interesting read. And if you like a little bit of history and you want to understand why things were kind of happening the way they did, it's a good way to find out about the War on Terror.
Awesome. Okay, you have a book signing coming up in a week or two?
I have a book signing in Arizona
okay.
on September 3rd at the Poison Pen. And then we're working to get into the summer in the Spy Museum in D.C.
Wow. Okay, so those who want to come see him in person, make sure you hit Arizona and D.C., and I'm sure you'll be posting on your social media.
Also LinkedIn. I have a lot of information in the book on LinkedIn. If you look back on my profile, I have excerpts from the book.
Oh,
so
nice.
So people can read little bits of it and get a feel for whether they'll find it interesting. So that's a good way to go. That's at Thomas Pecora on LinkedIn.
Okay. Yes, we will be following. We will make sure that I hope that you'll hit Texas and join us in Texas so I can come out and support you as well. And so thank you again, sir. You are absolutely phenomenal and I truly appreciate you.
I appreciate you having me on your show.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And we look forward to hearing from you. Good luck to you. And
thank you.
See you then.